Right now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Carl Christensen with a story about a group of heroes from World War I.
Way before cell phones, there were these things called telephones. And in the early days, a telephone call required a switchboard operator to make the connection.
Operator,
one moment, please.
Thank you.
Writer Meg Jones tells the story of a group of switchboard operators whose skill and courage on the front lines helped the U.S. win World War I.
100 years ago, a group of patriotic Americans boarded ships in New York and headed off to war. They wore U.S. Army Signal Corps uniforms, were fluent in English and French, and were sent to France to fill a critical need in communications during World War I. The fact that they were female set them apart from the millions of other Americans in uniform in Europe. They were called the Hello Girls because of their jobs. They were telephone operators who handled calls by American and Allied troops fighting at the front throughout France. Just as radios were integral during World War II, in 1918, telephones were the military's best way to communicate. And the country that led the world in telephone technology was the United States. Here in America, most phone operators were women. They sat at switchboards and connected calls by plugging in long cords. When General John Pershing arrived in France, he quickly realized he needed experienced telephone operators, so he convinced the Army to send female volunteers. More than 7,000 women offered to go, and 223 were ultimately selected and sent to France. In fact, two of the women were from Wisconsin, Martina Hainan from Green Bay and Hildegard Van Brunt from Milwaukee. Now, this was 2 years before women were even allowed to vote in the United States. Every command to advance or retreat or hold fire was delivered by telephone, and it took an operator to connect that call. French officers frequently needed to communicate with their American counterparts, and it was the Hello Girls who put those calls through and stayed on the line to act as simultaneous translators. Before they arrived in France, it was taking male phone operators as long as 60 seconds to connect a call. When the American women arrived, the timing was cut to just 10 seconds. As they quickly, calmly, and efficiently handled numerous calls, they were privy to national security secrets and frequently served near the front lines. Some came under bombardment. Two phone operators never returned home, victims of the Spanish flu epidemic. The women were among the last Americans to leave Europe after the war, handling phone calls until the Treaty of Versailles was signed. Ultimately, they connected 26 million calls and proved to be a significant factor in winning the war. The Hello Girls were proud of the work they had done in France, and when they returned home, they tried to join veterans groups. When they were asked for their discharge papers, the phone operators contacted the Defense Department for the required paperwork. And that's when the Army told them they were not veterans. Even though they had signed oaths as members of the U.S. Army Signal Corps, worn uniforms, saluted officers, were frequently in danger, and not free to leave whenever they wanted, the Army said basically, "Oh, didn't we tell you? You were just well-paid civilians." Which was heartbreaking for many of the women. They didn't get medals or bonuses given to every member of the armed services. They didn't get medical benefits given to every other American who served in uniform during World War I. They couldn't call themselves veterans or march in Memorial Day parades. Some of the Hello Girls petitioned Congress and the military for decades and were repeatedly rebuffed in their attempts to be called veterans. Finally, in 1977, President Jimmy Carter signed legislation recognizing what should have been done 6 decades earlier. By then, only a handful of the phone operators were still alive. One of them told her family the long fight to become a veteran meant she could have something so many of her fellow phone operators had been denied, a flag in her coffin when she died.
Meg Jones is a reporter with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and the author of World War II Milwaukee. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Wisconsin Public Television in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook. I'm Carl Christensen.
Now, the black-necked stilt might sound like an obscure kind of tool maybe for doing yard work. It's actually the name of a bird found typically in Gulf states that's been known to visit us here in Wisconsin. It sounds like this. According to more than 30 nests biologists found this year at Horicon Marsh National Wildlife Refuge, the stilts are becoming a more common sight here in the state. Sumner Madison is a conservation biologist specializing in birds with the Wisconsin DNR. He's one of the people who found these colonies. Sumner, welcome back to Central Time.
Pleasure to be here.
Well, describe the black-necked stilt for us, please.
So the black-necked stilt is unique in appearance among all shorebirds. It is a two-toned bird with beautiful black wings and a black back and mostly a black head, and then it's white underneath, so it's a black and white shorebird. But what's unique about this bird, other than that its coloration, is it has extremely long legs, beautiful rose pink colored legs that are about 8 to 9 inches long. So this makes for a very remarkable sighting.
And this is a very rare sighting historically in Wisconsin, right? Not like they never, ever showed up here, but it was a rarity, right?
Right. Prior to 1990, we had only 4 historical records in the state.
Wow.
The first one was from 1847, April of 1847, near Racine. The second one was in May, mid-May of 1951 at Horicon Marsh. The third one was August 1986. Also at Horicon National Wildlife Refuge. And the fourth one was in 1987 in Columbia County. But since the 1990s, we've seen a marked increase in the number of stilts.
And these are birds that we thought maybe were popping by and visiting, but now you're finding nests in Horicon Marsh.
That's right. We actually had our first recorded nest of black-necked stilts in 1999 during the first Wisconsin Breeding Bird Atlas, which ran from 1995 to the year 2000. So we were very excited by the occurrence of this first nesting pair. Now for the second iteration of the Atlas, from 2015 to 2019, we've had birds breeding almost every year during this last five-year period.
Where do we typically think of the stilts breeding?
So typically they occur in the Gulf Coast, also along the southern Atlantic coast. And then there's also birds that occur in the far western, southwestern part of the United States in California. So what we're seeing here is really since the 1990s is a dramatic and marked increase in the number of sightings in the Midwest. And the first confirmed breeding records in the Midwest was in Missouri in 1990. And then in Illinois and South Dakota in 1994, prior to Wisconsin's first record in 1999.
Okay, I feel like we're in a pretty different environment from the South Atlantic, the Gulf States, the Southwestern United States. What's going on? Why are they starting to breed here?
Yeah, so I think what's happening is it's really a reflection of climate change. It's hard to know for certain, but I think as sites have become more dry, the birds have moved farther north. But conversely, with flooding, this is why climate change is not just global warming, but both warming as well as severe storms. As we've seen flooding occur, some of these sites where they may have nested, if they haven't dried up, they might have been flooded. So we're seeing more and more birds expanding their range to the north.
Now, this is a bird that's not, we wouldn't say native to Wisconsin. Would we then think of it as an invasive species?
It's not an invasive species. It's really a bird that is a native to North America for sure. Mm-hmm. It has occurred here very seldomly, as I mentioned before. But it's a bird that we're seeing in increasing number because of these changing habitat conditions to the south. So at Horicon this year, we were very surprised when Daryl Christensen and myself, my colleague Daryl Christensen, went out and looked. We were looking for some other marsh nesting birds, and I noticed a black-necked stilt driving away a killdeer. And I didn't really have a search image for black-necked stilt nesting habitat since I wasn't very familiar with that bird in Wisconsin. Although some people like think I've lived that long. but what we found is that the birds were occupying these mud flats or peaty mud areas with decaying cattail stubs. And when I got closer to where this bird had been driving off the killdeer, I saw 4 chicks. And the first 4 stilt chicks that I had seen.
Wow.
In my life. And then we looked at similar habitat that where they were occurring, and sure enough, on these islets or islands of mud and sparse vegetation across the marsh, they were also nesting. So it was very, very informative, very interesting to see this.
Are they going to do they leave here for the winter then?
They leave here for the winter. They go down to the Gulf Coast. They also migrate. The species migrates to Central and South America. South America, they occur year-round down there, but this is what's called a neotropical migrant bird because of its long-distance migrations. Well, time will tell whether or not we will see this many again at Horicon Marsh, but the habitat is certainly suitable for them.
If someone's out there listening, maybe a casual or less casual bird watcher, is there a reasonable chance if they go to Horicon next summer they might spot some of these guys?
Yes. So there is an auto tour at Horicon Marsh, and there they have been seen in past years. So they very well may see a bird in that part of the refuge.
And is this a kind of bird, you know, you hear cranes, they'll migrate back and forth, they'll find a spot, they'll keep finding that spot again. Is that how these guys work with migration? Once they pick a place, there's a good chance they're going to come back?
There's no guarantee that they will come back to the exact same spot.
Mm-hmm.
But they may come back to a different spot in the marsh, a different site. With that many nesting pairs, and because they had good nesting success, I would expect to see birds back at Horicon next year.
In our last few moments, what was it like in that moment when you spotted for the first time ever your first chicks of this bird species?
I was more than delighted and absolutely, quite frankly, I was absolutely astounded because I had never seen a black-necked stilt in Wisconsin before, much less a stilt with chicks. And because they lay four eggs, here they had good hatching success. All four hatched out. We later found out that the production, the number of young produced, was also very good. So it was really a remarkable event for both myself and Darrell Christensen.
Sumner, thanks a lot for joining us again.
Pleasure to be here.
That's Sumner Madison, conservation biologist with Wisconsin DNR. We talked to him today about black-necked stilts nesting for the first time, as far as we can tell, here in Wisconsin.